All right, here we have it. I don't know what we would call this. The first Kimapa, first umpire and Kimapa. We've done a couple of shows together now. But what we really wanted to do today was talk about cricket media a little bit. Because the three of us have got some things cooking. We'll get to those a little bit later. But I wanted to know what your first memory was of sort of cricket media, Robbie. Like what? So not so much the cricket, but maybe something in the media that grabbed your eye. Maybe it was a book or a highlight package or a piece of commentary or something that
you remember. For me, it was Tony Gregg's piece of commentary. That absolutely captured me. Was the Desert Storm in 1998-99 when Sachin was batting. Oof, the commentary was just insane. Just like, hit me in the face and I was blown.
How old would you have been then?
14.
Oh, okay. So just old enough to get that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Mine was a similar age. Mine was when I was 13 and it was the Shane Warne ball to Mike Gatting.
Oh.
And it's Richie Beno's commentary.
Yeah, he was good as well.
Where he says, Mike Gatting doesn't know what happened to him. And then there's like a pause and then he goes, still doesn't know. and there was a poster that they made, Victorian Cricket made this and sent this out to like all the Victorian Cricket members. And it had every word of Richie Beno's commentary on the poster.
No,
so you could kind of see Gatting and Warne in the background, but it's mostly just the words. What about you? Is there anything that grabbed you?
So like, to be honest, it was the magazine called Sports Star.
Yeah.
So it used to have all those posters in it. So I used to paint my room with those posters.
Younger people won't get it, right? Like we had posters in our room.
So cool. I had cutouts inside my cupboard of Sunil Gavaskar, Sachin Tendulkar, G.R. Vishwanath. All of these.
Did you guys used to do the thing where you had them on your folders as well?
I had
a friend who just, he was obsessed by Alan Border and he just had an Alan Border folder where I've never seen so many photos of Alan Border in one area before.
That's nuts, man. And I remember like all of us kids in our locality, all of them had like either a Sachin Tendulkar poster or some tennis players, or like it was back then mostly Sachin. In the early 90s, mid 90s, because he was such a phenom at that point in time.
Yeah.
He was a huge phenom at that point, especially for his youngsters, right? Because he played the aggressive brand of cricket that India wasn't known for at that point in time.
We've never talked about this, but were you into cricket catalogues as well, either of you? So we had this thing in Australia. There's a couple of companies that they would send out at the start of the cricket season, the catalogue of all the new stuff. And we were as excited about that as we would have been about a Sports Star magazine. We had Inside Cricket was our magazine in Australia. But Inside Cricket was great, but we wanted this magazine because it would show us what the new bat designs were, what the gloves looked like.
And how much they cost as well.
Yeah, and all that sort of stuff and all this information. And we, like, the first kid who would get that would be like a hero, right? And it would be passed around until the other kids got them as well. Like, you know, you had all this different kind of media that you connected to, right?
Yeah, so for me, the first time I saw a magazine like that was when my first time in Australia, I think in 2004, when we went to the Karnataka team to Brisbane. And then we went to a cricket store and then there was a magazine and they were giving it out. Free. I'm like, wow, take it back. And then we can see what we can buy from this. Because at that point in time, you didn't have contracts or sponsors, sponsors, right? So you're like, okay, can we pick up a kit bag? I remember I had one Grenicles kit bag from Australia that I considered like my lucky kit bag. And it served me for like the longest time. I had it from, I think, 2005 till 2008-09 when it was just like, I couldn't use it anymore. But I made my debut with India with that same kit bag. It was very, very, very sentimental.
Is that the days before you got given a kit bag when you made your...
Yeah.
What about you? Do you remember your first cricket book?
That was way pretty late, 2008. I read about Sachin's biography.
Who wrote that one? Do you remember?
I think Mujumdar did that.
Oh, you mean the autobiography?
Of course he remembers that. There's nothing that this man forgets.
That's the first cricket book you ever read.
Because being a dyslexic all these years, I never had the courage to read a book. And the real memory of cricket, not exactly media, like what I used to do when I was in my 10th standard, there was a game called Cricket Captain.
Yeah.
So I basically used to switch off the commentary files.
Is that the PC?
Yes, the PC one. So I used to switch off the commentary files and used to do the commentary myself, trying to mimic like how it used to be done on TV so that I could pick up the language and stuff. It was pretty amazing. And they had this Australian domestic cricket also in that game. They had the county cricket also in that. So It was fun.
Did you ever play cricket computer games?
Yeah.
Did you play cricket captain?
Brian Lara cricket.
Yeah. So Brian Lara cricket was Shane Warne cricket in Australia.
And then cricket 99.
Yeah.
Cricket 99 was, oh my dude.
Have you played the new ones, by the way?
No.
They're getting quite good again. There was like a dip for a couple of years where I was like, I'm not sure this is worth it. And then just the last couple of years, they started to come back. Like you can bowl wobble balls and stuff
really?
As well.
And so for me, I can't get my head around the joystick.
I know.
Like it's just so difficult. I'd rather be on a mouse and keys, you know what I mean?
I like the old school arcade machines.
Yeah.
Where for some reason, they just work better for my brain. So even with, like my son will be like, L2, and I'm like, which one's L2? I have to flip it up and check. Because I didn't grow up on those. I grew up on the old arcade games. And there was never a great cricket arcade game either. You know, but the Brian Lara cricket is one of the great ones,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah, like, exactly.
Brilliant game, man.
What about you? What was your first cricket book?
My first cricket book. I'd have to say, the first one that really had an impact on me was Stephen Waugh's book. The Long Diary, the big one.
Wow.
And then I realized, and I was playing then, and I realized that I shouldn't be reading cricket books when I'm actually playing cricket, because I get influenced a lot. So I started living
it. You just started sledging people while you were playing all this.
He was nuts.
I
was
like, you had a red hanky coming out of your trousers.
Yeah, I did. I actually did. It was weird. And I was like, no, this needs to stop. I'm eccentric enough. I don't need more eccentricities. So I actually stopped completely. And then, so I stopped reading cricket books and then I read everything else. So I started reading a lot of other nonfiction stuff. People used to think I'm weird.
Yeah, I mean, we still think you're weird.
Yeah, I know.
My parents had a book at home called From Bradman to Border, which was every Australian captain, which was really, really cool. But then my high school had one cricket book and the cricket book was by Barry Richards. And it was like, it's so weird because he's like, he's not even an Australian cricketer. He's not even an international cricketer. But that was the one book that they had there. And I must have read that like 44 times. Like,
really?
You're just going back because there just weren't that many cricket books in my life. And so I was like, and I would go back and I remember talking about Richards and he could barely remember the book himself.
Really?
So like I remembered it in greater detail than he did because I think he wrote like two or three books. Like it wasn't even the only thing that he did.
Wow, okay.
Right? So it's, you know, for me, that was a really, really big one. What about in movies or documentaries?
Multiple times, like docu-series, a lot of those stuff because... I think way early Star Sports, they used to have some of these coaching series also. Like they were brilliant. And there was another Aamir Khan movie, Aval Number. Mm. So that came up. And
there was this movie, Chamatkar. Have you
Chamatkar,
watched?
Yes. That's a brilliant movie. Brilliant, super, brilliant movie.
Shah Rukh Khan was a cricket coach. And then there was a ghost involved in the movie. It was
Of course.
Yeah, it was
insane. It's like real life.
Yeah. It was insane. It was a great movie.
They should have called them the Ghost Riders.
I think like in mainstream, the one picture which captured the imagination of the entire nation was Lagan.
Yeah.
Because that kind of made it.
Did you watch Lagan?
So... I should have watched it.
No.
And so many people have said, watch Lagan. I'm like, yeah. And then I think my wife's watched it. And for somehow I just haven't. I'll do a proper watch along one day. And I would really like to watch it.
It's the nitty gritties that they explained. I think it really helped in making cricket a little more mainstream in India because a lot of Masi stuff became popular after that because they went through the nitty gritties of it because while they were coaching these villagers about cricket at that time, I think they at least touched upon certain aspects of it at depth.
Yeah.
And a lot of people kind of got to know about no balls, all other stuff. So again,
it's interesting.
Run out at the non-striker's end.
Yes, exactly.
All of that was education.
Hitting the ball two times.
Yeah. Double
so all
touch.
Those double touch and all those things. Runner. All lot of such things.
I like that.
Much was covered. You like that movie, I'm telling you.
There's a movie called Wondrous Oblivion. Have either of you ever seen that?
No, the one that touched me the most was Fire in Babylon.
I'm pretty sure I went to the premiere of Fire in Babylon.
Did you?
Yeah, I know I went to the after party, so I'm assuming I went to the premiere. Like I remember going to a party and everything else, but I just remember being, like you watched it probably on TV or whatever. Yeah, imagine watching it with like 500 cricket fans.
Amazing.
Like it was such a moving thing to be there. And And also, it was a particular kind of cricket fan. Do you know what I mean? It was a cricket fan who liked story and like, do you know what I mean? They were there because they'd grown up with the West Indies.
Yeah, the ardent cricket fan.
Right? Yeah, there was something just really special about it. And so, yeah, that was huge. Wondrous Oblivion is like, I can't remember when it was made, maybe in the 90s. Delroy Lindo is in it. And it's like about a West Indian who moves in next door to this young English kid and like teaches him cricket. And then like I don't want to ruin the film, but the closing scenes involve the West Indian team and everything. Wow. And it's just really, really cool. What are any songs? Because I don't know if cricket songs are not, they're more of a West Indian and Australian thing. I don't know if they're an Indian thing, are they?
But the Awwal Number, they had that.
I haven't watched Awwal Number, by the way. I don't know about that movie.
So it's almost the climax of that movie is exact repeat of what then Lagan took the climate from that particular movie.
Is it?
The climax is exactly the same. So, Aamir Khan wins the match by hitting the six on the last ball and completes his 100. It's the same thing. So, but there's a terror plot also involved in that.
I've probably seen it in passing on one of those television channels.
Yes, must have, definitely. Because I think before Lagan, if any movie that captures the match, outside of Chamatkar, was that movie only. Because there they try to touch upon the lives of the cricketers also, like what exactly happens behind the scene in a very, I would say, in a very sophisticated manner still, but it was good.
I'm just remembering so much, man, while we're talking. Like, I remember we were subscribed to Sports Star, the magazine.
Mm. Yes.
And all I was keen about was the poster that you get in the centerfold of that magazine.
Exactly.
And then there'd be a little, like at the
those
bottom.
Those are so popular that I know
about
them.
The bottom corner of it would say, or bottom or top corner would say whose poster it is.
Yeah.
And if it was anyone we liked, oh my word, we'd fight over it, dude. It was such an insane magazine. And like you read about like proper reviews about what happened in test matches and what transpired. And you started noticing, you started liking certain writers, certain journalists. You like their style of writing, the way they narrated the story. It was so amazing to read. I just feel like that doesn't exist today in the world.
Exactly.
No, I think a lot of that stuff, I mean, if you think about the sort of 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s, there was a different kind of cricket media culture in general, right? So everything was a bit more nationalistic and then these like giants from another country would turn up, right? So it's a very different kind of world. Even once the internet comes along, you can look at Rahul Dravid's stats online, right? And you can find these players on YouTube. And so you didn't even really know, like I remember Ijaz Ahmed, like reading about him in the cricket magazine, might've been the ABC cricket magazine in Australia. And the guy calling him like saying he bats like an axeman. And like in my head, I was like, he's going to be my favorite cricketer. Like, what does this even mean? And then you see it and he's got this weird open thing. You're like, that's ugly. Why is he batting like that? He's batting like that. But you grow this sort of thing in your mind, whereas it's very different now to, you know, we kind of know a lot more. And so there was a lot more mystique. And did you guys ever hear the 12th Man tapes? Do you know about the 12th Man tapes?
No, bro.
So you talk about Lagan.
See, I'll tell you what, radio wasn't popular in
this wasn't even radio.
Yeah, but even then, I'm saying that sort of culture wasn't popular in India until I think the early 2000s, whether it's shows or radio.
This was a comedy tape.
Yeah.
Like a comedy album.
That kind of media did not exist in England.
And it was all comedy about the commentary, Channel 9 commentary team.
Oh, really?
And it's one guy who does the voice. And he like some of it's massively racist. It was racist then, let alone now. But there's so much, like when you're a young, quick kid, it was about cricket and it had lots of swearing. And we just couldn't believe that this existed. And we were, you know, our parents would let us listen to it, right?
Yeah.
And it was, they released a single and it went to like number one in Australia. Like one of the, and it was like a guy doing comedy song of Richie Beno's commentary, right?
I think I've heard this.
Yeah. It was ridiculous, but it was a different kind of media time than what we get now, right? And things weren't as fragmented. So like those tapes were passed around, right? The same way the Sports Star magazines were passed around and everything, right? Like if you couldn't get a copy, you had to get one from a friend, right?
And I think the other challenge back then also was Australia was so far away. And back then it was all about VHS tapes. And like, if you had to see something, there was no, like, and then went from VHS, went to CDs.
Yeah.
You know, by the time you got access to all of this stuff, it was so passe. And like, you'd already moved on to the next thing or something.
I remember getting given a cricket coaching VHS.
Ooh.
And it was, and I remember my friends, because I'd always talked up Richie Richardson. And my friends were like, oh, he's not Viv Richards. And then we looked at this coaching manual and every single, like, and he had been hired to show the correct shot for everyone. And I was just, I told you guys that he was great. But we watched that until like it started to fray, right? And none of us had a good technique at the end. But there were things like that that you would remember as well, like that where you sort of like communally with your friends found like one bit of cricket culture and then you end up with it, right?
Exactly. And like there were a lot of rumors also because considering the fact that information flow was so stringent, like after 96 World Cup, there was this rumor that Jayasurya had springs in his bat. So all those things would capture
that. Haunting in 2003, the springs came back.
With that fiberglass at the back, the fiberglass sticker or something he had at the back of the bat, which was banned later on or something
Right? Heaps of batters around the world had them. They weren't hitting it like Jayasurya and Ponting, were they?
Jayasurya in his prime was... Yeah. Something else, man. You would like sit at home like, oh my God, when is this guy going to get out?
The forearms?
Like, yo, you saw those forearms. Huge.
And he's not, when you see him in real life, he's not like an intimidating physical force. Like,
he's a sweetheart.
We were talking about this before, like Matt Hayden, you see him in real life and you're like, that's a big man.
Yeah.
You see Santa Jayasurya and you think it's just an uncle who's got lost and gone into the commentary box, right? Am I wrong?
No.
Am I wrong, Robbie? Am I wrong?
He looks like a former cricketer.
Yeah, he's an uncle.
A little bit of a pot belly now.
Yeah, and a bald head and everything. Yeah. Like he doesn't, you know, you look at someone like Aravinda De Silva, who's like, or Sunil Gavaskar, they still look like they were athletes.
But Sanath looked like an athlete when he played.
When he played, yeah.
He was top notch, dude. Like his numbers are
crazy.
Yeah.
And they don't get discussed that much, to be honest. Like considering the way people talk about Jack Carlos in Test cricket, somehow, Jayasurya slips under the radar when it comes to ODI cricket because the numbers are crazy.
I think Jack Carlos is considered more for Test cricket than ODI cricket. I think the ODI conversation comes along for best all-rounder who ever played the ODI game. Sanath Jayasurya's name will be then top.
Should be. But don't you think never gets discussed that much.
Don't you think Jayasurya has the same problem that Michael Bevan has, which is the format that they were great at is now the least important format? Do you know what I mean?
Like Jayasurya, in that era.
Yeah, Jayasurya was a good Test cricketer, right? But not a great batter, and he didn't really play much T20 cricket, which we know he would have dominated, but we don't see it. So he ends up in this weird place. You said that the Sachin book was the first book you've read. Have you got a favorite cricket book, or is that it?
That's the only book I read in all my life.
That's not true, because you read The Art of Batting.
I actually
you listened to the audiobook, didn't you?
The audiobook, not the reading stuff.
Yeah, I can't read books now, man. For me, even if I'm reading a book, I prefer reading it while I'm listening to it. You know what I mean?
So I see books now, like obviously I've written a couple of books in the last couple of years and I've got a couple more lined up. I actually see them now as more like a total package anymore because not that I'm saying everyone doesn't read books anymore, but if you write a book, it's also like The Art of Batting, we could make like 50 podcasts.
Yeah,
right? 100%. Like, you know, maybe more than that, right? And, you know, you look at Tim Wigmore's book on Test cricket, he could make like 150 podcasts.
So even that also, the audiobook I listened to.
That wasn't him though, was it?
Yes.
Is it weird actually having listened to an audiobook and then having to talk to me normally?
It's quite different, to be honest.
And you know what was really great? As I read a book, I read Muhammad Ali's biography, and the audiobook sounds exactly like him. But it's not him, obviously. Yeah. But it sounded exactly like him. And like, how does that happen?
It's a real art form, the way that they do all that sort of stuff, actually. I've noticed now that there's a lot of people who do cricket books and do the audio for them, but aren't cricket people.
Really?
And so they lose the audience.
Like voice actors or something.
Yeah, and they lose the audience because they don't know how to pronounce a cricketer's, you know. We all mispronounce cricketers' names, right? But generally we know the famous players and, and they don't know how to say a famous player's name, right? Yeah. And so if you're reading a cricket book, that really takes you out of the vibe. And I've been told that there's a couple of people who are just like specialists now because like they know how to convey that across. Yeah. Yeah. And there's also like you got people like Bumble who doesn't even do his own audiobook. And I was like, but Bumble, you're literally famous for your voice. Just get in the booth, stop being lazy. But he is 80.
He's 80.
He's 80.
You can take it easy. Well, sorry, I cut you off. You were saying something.
He doesn't.
About?
No one knows.
No. I was just saying that, to be honest. Like,
do you listen to many cricket books then?
I try to. I read a lot of articles. A lot of articles.
When you listen to the articles, do you press the play button on the website to listen to them? Or do you read them?
Generally, I just read them. Because most of the reading happens during the night. So when my kids and my wife, they're sleeping, so if I would listen to audiobooks, I would get kicked out of the house. So I have to manage that part. So majority of my cricket reading has happened during the late nights when I'm not getting the sleep, and somehow at that time I'm consuming a lot of content. So I end up consuming hours of content then, like article after article. And if a certain article would lead to another article or would trigger me to like go back to Google or search about something, that would hook me in for like maybe good 3-4 hours also.
So I do this for non-cricket stuff. Like one thing leads to the other. Like I have varied interests.
Mm.
So I read when I was 18, I was playing Ranji Trophy. I read this book called Life After Life by Raymond A. Moody. Incredible book. Help me overcome the fear of death. So basically, he's a guy who actually did clinical research on clinical deaths. So clinical deaths mean, so basically in the medical field means, so clinically dead means you're clinically dead for a bit between 2 minutes or 30 seconds and 12 minutes, and then you're revived. So what do they experience in that period of time? I remember reading that when I was 18. It just, like, I go into these rabbit holes that I never come out of sometimes.
Yeah. Like, but do you read or listen to books?
Back then I used to read.
Yeah.
But then once audiobooks came on, game changer, dude.
Yes.
Game changer.
So I don't listen to a lot of cricket podcasts, but I do listen to a lot of cricket articles.
Where do you have the time when you make so many podcasts yourself? You don't have time to listen to anything.
I don't know. I don't, it's not that I'm against cricket podcasts.
I'm surprised he's even still married, dude. Like, this guy shouldn't be married. The amount of stuff he does is crazy.
Mate, every time I try and do a 20-minute podcast and you drag him out to an hour and a half.
I drag him out. What is your favorite book, by the way?
Cricket
book. Your favorite cricket book.
It's probably Bob Warmer's book. Have you ever read Bob Warmer's book?
No.
So it's called The Art and Science of Cricket. I think it's the most important cricket book ever. It's not something that you would sit and read. It's like about that thick, right? And it's big. It's got lots of pictures as well. But it's basically, it's a combination of everything you've ever thought about technically in cricket. It's a bit dated now because it's 15, 20 years old. But everything you've ever thought about in cricket, like in one book, we're just like, now I understand this. Now I understand that. And they talk about the science and you know, they use callus in it and everything. But it's also, you know, Woolmer also had this incredible spirit around him. Like, you know, Woolmer is the reason that associate cricket is so good, because after leaving the other jobs, he went back and just basically grew associate cricket based over here, I think, for a while, wasn't he, in Dubai? So I think that for me is the most important book ever, because it's the book that sort of gets to this is how you play the game, and then little bits of this is what it means. So I think that's great. CLR James's book is obviously definitely worth reading. I love Usman Samiuddin's book, The Unquiet Ones, as well. And have you ever read Golden Boy by Christian Ryan?
No.
Yeah, you guys should read that. That is just a remarkable bit of writing about, like, not the most famous cricketer, like, you know, like, it's Kim Hughes, but the famous cricketers are in the background, because you've got Rod Marsh over here, you got Dennis Lilly over here, you got Greg Chappell, but it's about this guy who's just sort of been broken down by macho Australian culture, but trying to slog through it. It's a really, really good read. So
yeah,
really,
so I don't think growing up we had access to a lot of this, right?
Yeah,
and it was very hard to get access to a lot of these books.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Bob Woolmer, because the first post-match analysis memory that I have was of 99 World Cup, where he had come for a special session about coaching methodologies that he used to have for South African cricket, and all these legends of the game, they hooked onto that particular piece because they wanted to know. Because he was coming up with some very innovative ideas at that time, because he was the one who introduced the data for the first time, all those things. And I clearly remember once that session was done, I don't remember the cricketers who were sitting. I think maybe Ravi Shastri was there, Gavaskar was there, a couple of other people were there, and they were having a conversation on it. Like, do you agree with what Bob Woolmer said, or do you think so it's out and out way too innovative? You cannot be like, it's like treading the path. All those things were discussed. So I have a vivid memory of that particular session that they had on Bob Woolmer, because he was such a mystery by that time that people just didn't know like what kind of a methodology he's coming up with. It was data usage, reverse sweeps, sort of other innovative
earpiece
stuff.
Exactly. You know, he was so far ahead of the game, and the game didn't really appreciate him, I think, certain point.
So but the thing is, we were also so hard-nosed about the game because it was so drenched in in tradition in that
cricket
sense.
Cricket people, right? Only knew cricket things, right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And then we discussed, like the gentleman's, like it's called a gentleman's game. That the whole origin of that story, until we actually cracked that whole bottle up, like nobody knew what that actually meant.
Yes, right? Exactly.
It's like that. We're very hard-nosed about breaking away from tradition.
Exactly. And that's the only reason that memory has stayed with me, because that post-match, that post-session analysis was all a pretty negative tone, because they just didn't agree with what he said. And now, if I look back 25 years down the line, we've almost adopted almost everything he said in that interview. Like, all those small snippets got integrated into the mainstream stuff at one point or the other.
I think that's a really good point. And the fact that you remember that little clip, I think tells you what cricket media can do and everything. Right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so the three of us have got a little thing going. A little something happening at the moment. And I think I know from your case, Robbie, and it was funny, we talked to another player, we won't name drop him because I'm sure he can come on and say the same thing. But he was just saying that cricket fans just don't know enough about cricket. Yeah. Right. So a very basic thing, which goes back to your point about Lagan, right? Sometimes it's the ability to be able to show people what cricket is. And that's kind of what we want to do here. We want to talk about the nostalgia and the history and everything else, but you also want people just to know more about cricket, right?
Yeah, so much more. Because there's so many complexities in our game that it's hard to comprehend by just watching the game. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to be taken through the whole process sometimes. You need to be empowered with the information to understand things at a certain depth. And I think there's not enough done on that front, right? I think today I think media is driven in a very different manner, right? And I think there's another way to do it that is a little bit more inclusive by nature with the fans, and not just the casual fans. I'm talking more about the ardent cricket fans.
Yeah, hardcore.
The ones who love the game, who love the intricacies of the game. And I think less is done to serve them, right? Today, a lot of cricket is based around how entertaining it can be off the field. Like, as if cricket on the field is not entertaining enough. Mm. Just calling it, like traditionally calling it as the game is happening would be so entertaining. But even that isn't paid attention to, right? You know, the nuances of the game isn't paid attention to. The nuances of individual cricketers and how they make their cookie crumble isn't paid attention to. And very little is actually, dealt into that. And for me, I think those are the aspects that the ardent cricket fans actually want and crave for. Yes. And I think those are the things that I think that, you know, will be done really well in the near future.
I think your channel and my channel are examples of trying to be entertaining. I say trying on occasions.
On occasions.
But a lot of it is also like explaining the game to people.
Yes, yes.
So players, especially in this culture where players often only commentate with players, right? Or they commentate with commentators who've been on for 40 years and know what players want to talk about. What you and I are trying to do is open up the game and show people what is actually happening out on the field. So that I think Robbie used a really good term then, inclusivity. I think a lot of fans, hardcore fans, just don't understand basic terminology and they don't understand what's happening on the field. And what you and I have tried to do is definitely sort of, I don't want to say decode that, but allow people into those conversations so they understand what's happening on the field. So when they can watch it, we go, oh, I get why he's doing this now.
Exactly. And at the same time, I personally feel that in India, somehow, like fans, they romanticize the sports a lot, but they've never been integrated that well in general. So it's not only about the knowledge part of it, like where we integrate them and make them understand it, make the things homogenous. They're still, even from a cultural perspective also, it's never been positioned well that much that cricket as a culture would integrate outside the broadcasting, outside the other aspects of it also. Like the way it has been done in the US or in Europe, the way football gets consumed, you have a, like the way you said, it came up as a complete shock to me that used to get a catalog. It's like an alien thing for an Indian audience, to be honest. Yeah. Yeah. Like even today, I cannot even imagine such a thing coming up.
And it's such a simple thing, right?
Yes.
Like if say bat manufacturers just put out a catalog every day, like every year or every half a year of all the latest things that they've
just a photo. You wouldn't even do a catalog anymore. You do an Instagram photo shoot, right?
Yeah.
Here's our stuff.
I'm telling you, they'd love catalogs. Yes. I mean,
obviously they'd love catalogs. I still probably have some of mine at home.
Even the Gen Zs would love the catalogs.
I just bumped into a channel yesterday accidentally. The guy had 8.5 million followers and he does this only, the reviews of the cricket gadgets and all.
Yeah.
Whether this bat would survive a 3 kg ball or not, how good is the bat, all those stuff. And with that, he has 8.5 million subscribers.
And wow. I think there's something, there's another guy, there's a couple of other guys who just refurbish bats.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yes. Bro, that is such a science, man.
I know.
I would love to take people down that rabbit hole because that is such a deep rabbit hole because there's so much you can do with a bat to make it survive, like things that you can't imagine it to survive.
Yeah.
Right? There's so much that can be done. And for me, after 20, 25 years of playing, like 30 years of playing cricket professionally, non-professionally and growing up and all of that, dude, I can tell you there are things that I'm seeing today that are like, oh, why didn't I think of this? You know, there's so many gaps there that are yet to be filled in cricket media and something that would be so value additional to anyone and everybody.
No, agreed. I think, you know, when you see something like the bats, you realize that there's a culture. Do you know what I mean? And I think cricket culture, partly because of the way that England has always been and the way it's dominated cricket, has been this sort of cucumber sandwiches and stopping for tea and whatever. But actually, through the rest of cricket, and even England's changed, we now have this different culture within cricket, right?
And it's changed so fast, hasn't it?
And we want the different voices to talk about the different culture and explain them. And we want to talk about the history, but from a modern lens, right? But we also, we want to talk about the modern history. Right? The stories of players not that long ago, right? Yeah. You know, of going back through Harmanpreet's innings ball by ball, right?
Yeah.
The first one, not the second one. You know, all those sorts of things. And I think that cricket media can do all these things. Yes. I think it can be the next step. And we would like to be a part of that.
Yeah, I genuinely think that the sport is romanticized so much that I think enough isn't done to close the gap between cricketers and the fans.
Mm.
And I think that needs to be democratized a little bit. Cricketers would be I think today the meaning of celebrity has changed. The meaning of a star has changed, right? Yeah, it's not about being exclusive anymore. It's about being inclusive, right? And I think a fan wants to be included in the journey of the athlete as well. And I think today, people who are celebrated a lot more are the ones who are a lot more fan inclusive, a lot more supporter inclusive. And I think that is being, I think that's in a transitional phase. But if you can do anything to kind of, you know, hasten that process, you know, it'd be awesome.
Exactly. To humanize the, I would say, your celebrities is something which has happened because across.
We're all human.
Mm. Yes.
Whether you're a celebrity cricketer or an actor or you still go in navigating through life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just as a human, you still take a shit in the morning and you go to sleep, you know, after putting...
Well, some humans get animus, but...
Yeah.
Like, considering the fact that with cinema, for that matter, with all these creators coming up, like anything, that gap has somehow filled in. But for cricket, that has not happened. Even from a creator's perspective, from a content creator's perspective, it has not been tapped in that well.
Mm.
Because the other side of it, you would see that there's a secondary market to it. Outside of the main cinema also, you consume a lot of OTT content, which were like maybe the YouTube creators turning into OTT level of content. So, but something of that sort has not happened in cricket yet. I cannot recall any such YouTube channel based on cricket, which turned into an OTT series or something of that sort.
No, you're right.
Imagine having a series, right, of different eras of cricket, which would be like, say, and for the modern fans of the game, right? Like for the youngsters, for the Gen Zs of the world, right? Mm. Or the Gen Alphas of the world. We talk about the history of the game. Where did BCCI come from? Where did New Zealand cricket come from? Mm. Where did South African cricket come from? ECB come from? The ICC, where did they come from? How did they form? And then just... Go to the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. Yeah. Like, who was alive? Get those guys to talk about it. What their era was like. You know what I'd love to do? I'd love to do an entire podcast series with Sunny Gavaskar.
Yeah, exactly.
Just an entire series with him about his experience of what Indian cricket was for him growing up. Because he played from then till now. He's still in the game. Hmm. He's 74, 75.
Yes.
Dude, he's the grand old man of Indian cricket.
seen so much.
I've seen everything.
So I think when it comes down to it, I've always thought about it this way, that like, for me, cricket is a conversation.
Yeah.
Like radio commentary, TV commentary, and now podcasts and watch-alongs and everything else have joined that, right? Like cricket is a conversation. And I think what we can do now is we can open that up to voices that have never been heard before.
Yeah.
Including these two guys and maybe more of me. Yeah. Anyway, that's the end of this podcast. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And I'm sure I will see both of you again.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.